morning. My name is Aaron Schneiderman. I work for the Department of Veterans Affairs here in Washington, D.C. I work for the War-Related Illness and Injury Study Center, which is housed at the Medical Center here in Washington. It's one of three centers by this name. Our focus is mainly on environmental exposures and combat veterans. We also provide clinical services for those who have difficult to diagnose chronic multi-symptom illness, so we have a full array of activities. I'd like to acknowledge one of my co-authors who's with us, Dr. Elisa Braver. Thank you very much, Elisa. And I'd also like to provide the following disclaimer. The opinions presented today are those of the authors and not those of the Department of Veterans Affairs or the United States government, necessarily. In addition, I have an updated abstract on the back table. It changes some of the figures and provides a more complete review of the analysis we did on this data. The title, Self-Reported Injuries and Neurological Symptoms Among Military Veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan, fairly self-explanatory. Greater than 1.5 million individuals have been deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan as of June 30th of this year. That is military personnel, specifically. The conflict in Iraq began in March of 2003. In Afghanistan, our military personnel were there on a war footing as of October 2001. When we think about combat operations, the traditional view of injury is that of occurring during combat operations because of weaponry or hostile activities between troops. But in fact, those who are in the military may encounter injurious mechanisms in a variety of activities because the military is responsible for a whole host of occupations, everything from operating motor vehicles to materials handling to every possible occupation you could really think of. What's unique about these events in Iraq and Afghanistan, the current ongoing conflicts, is that people who are unhappy with the military presence there have been utilizing IEDs or improvised explosive devices and other means of delivering lethal blast forces to those personnel and to civilians. And that has really propelled an interest in mild traumatic brain injury in returning troops. In addition to mild traumatic brain injury, always a risk for those in a combat setting is post-traumatic stress disorder. So, in this study, our purpose was to estimate combat theater mild traumatic brain injury occurrence in relation to injury mechanism, estimate the prevalence of post-traumatic stress disorder and post-concussive symptoms, and to investigate associations between injury characteristics, PTSD, and mild traumatic brain injury. Current post-concussive symptoms. Some of the background is that Schwab and her colleagues at the Defense and Veterans Brain Injury Center conducted clinical interviews with individuals who had been in the conflict theaters and returned. These are active duty personnel still on active duty, and found a prevalence 16% for mild traumatic brain injury. That is, individuals who reported having some alteration of consciousness or frank loss of consciousness while in theater. Hogue and his colleagues had found PTSD prevalence between 13 and 17% among those returning from Iraq and Afghanistan. Of note, pre-deployment PTSD prevalence was about 5% in one of these two studies. In the 2007 study, they looked separately at individuals who had injury experience and those who had not. Among those with injury, PTSD was about 32% compared to 14% among those who did not have an injury. Both mild traumatic brain injury and PTSD have some overlap in their persistent symptoms. And that might include irritability, sleep disturbance, headache, cognitive complaints, specifically memory, and anxiety, just to name a few of the most common overlaps. Now, this study drew the sampling frame from a Department of Defense roster that the Department of Veteran Affairs got from DOD that included National Guard, Reserve, and active duty individuals who had separated from the military. The distinction is important because those who are National Guard and Reserve may in fact be called up again to serve in either of these conflict areas. Enrollment on this roster ended as of September 30th, 2004. So this is the beginning of both of these conflict periods, or the beginning of both the conflicts in these different areas. Also important with regard to that date is that the uptick in insurgent activity really started at the end of 2004, that last quarter of 2004. So the frequency or prevalence of individuals launching suicide attacks, the utilization of improvised explosive devices really went up. So what we're looking at with this data is when things were relatively calm in the beginning of both of these conflicts. Not safe, but calmer than they became for a period of time. The sampling frame also was confined to the Mid-Atlantic. It was a postal survey. It was a one-time mailing with a reminder postcard at 2 weeks. That was all we were able to really negotiate with regard to not putting any fatigue or not fatiguing those who were receiving this survey and many others, because people are very interested in the returning veterans. It was anonymous in that there were no identifiers on the survey or on the returning envelope, hopefully to encourage individuals to respond honestly and forthrightly about some sensitive issues. The instruments of note or of importance to this analysis was the PTSD, or the Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder Checklist, also known as the PCL-17. This is a paper and pencil instrument which is validated against other paper and pencil instruments, and as well as clinical interview techniques to diagnose PTSD. So it's a highly regarded instrument. 17 items, all Likert scale. We also utilized the Brief Traumatic Brain Injury Screen. This is developed by the Defense and Veterans Brain Injury Center. They developed this for use in the clinical setting, and it really has three components. One is history of injury in the combat theater, and that would include fall, sports or training injuries, blast, motor vehicle crash, other transportation injuries, and that was it. Immediate symptoms post-injury was the second part of this three-question instrument. Did you, at the time of the injury, at the time of an injury, experience being dazed, confused, or seeing stars? Do you have amnesia for the event? Was there a loss of consciousness, less than a minute, 1 to 20 minutes, or greater than 20 minutes? Clearly, greater than 20 minutes, we're not talking about a mild traumatic brain injury, and there were very few people in that category who responded. The additional item on immediate symptoms was, did you have any other concussion-like symptoms at the time, such as irritability, headache, dizziness? The third part of this instrument is that of persistent symptoms, which includes headache, irritability, dizziness, memory complaints, balance problems, ringing in the ear or tinnitus, and sleep problems. Using the immediate symptoms responses, we dichotomized mild traumatic brain injury to two levels. The first, level one, is the less severe. That would be someone who said they were dazed or confused at the time of the injury, or had other symptoms in the post-injury phase, such as headache, dizziness, or irritability. Level two, we described as the more severe injury. Those who had amnesia for the event, who had a loss of consciousness of any duration, or self-reported having a head injury. These three parameters are the ones most commonly associated with persistent post-concussive symptoms in individuals who have a traumatic brain injury. So on to results. The sampling frame had a total of 7,259. We received 2,235 responses for a response rate of 34%. The population responding looked very much like the population from which the sample was drawn. One exception was that our oldest age group among the responders, 41 to 65 year old, was significantly different from the originating population. The loss was from the youngest group. In terms of conflict participation, 58% had been in Iraq only, 16% had been in Afghanistan only, and 26% had been in both theaters. 44% reported at least one injury mechanism. 12% had a history of mild TBI in the combat theater based on that immediate symptoms reporting. 11% reported symptoms that met the conventional threshold for PTSD. I could have said before that this instrument is scored, and the minimum score is 17, the upper end is 85. If one is at 50 or above, it's usually an indicator that they're experiencing or suffering from PTSD. So 11% met that threshold. Those who were in Iraq or had served in both conflicts were significantly different from those who had served in Afghanistan. There was higher reporting of PTSD from those who were in Iraq. Women also reported PTSD at a higher rate. So, for example, those who were in both theaters, men reported 11%, the women 22%. Women reported 18% for PTSD if they were only in Iraq. 35% of those who had a mild traumatic brain injury, that is, they had immediate symptoms that they reported, also reported three or more persistent symptoms that they said were due to the head injury. So, the survey was sent out at the end of February 2005. So we're talking a 5-month window from the last possible time they could have been in the conflict theater to the time that they reported persistent or current symptoms. For many, I think that it was probably a longer window, longer than 5 months. So we're talking about a chronic experience here. So here are prevalence ratios and confidence intervals for mild traumatic brain injury by injury mechanism. Sports and training was the most frequent, so we're going in order of frequency across this graph. Falls, the prevalence ratio is 5, but when we get to blast, motor vehicle crash, and bullet or shrapnel, the prevalence ratio for a mild traumatic brain injury is in the neighborhood of 8 and greater. We determined that falls, blast, and motor vehicle crash, and bullet and shrapnel were those high energy injury mechanisms, which carried greater risk. Prevalence ratios here for PTSD. On the left side of the screen, as the number of injury mechanisms reported went up, so did the reporting for PTSD, the association with PTSD. On the right side of the graph, as the severity of mild traumatic brain injury reported went up, so did the risk for PTSD. Here there are three things on this graphic, and I'm sorry to make it so busy, but this is looking at individuals who reported three or more current post-concussive symptoms. This is only individuals who reported a mild traumatic brain injury. So the reference category for injury mechanisms was one injury. For those who had two or three injury mechanisms, there was an increased association with reporting current post-concussive symptoms. Similarly, the more severe mild traumatic brain injury was slightly higher. With PTSD, clearly this is the highest prevalence ratio for current post-concussive symptoms. There is an overlap in the symptoms between PTSD and mild traumatic brain injury. In the instruments that we use, the overlap is only in the area of sleep disturbance and irritability. So we removed those items from the PTSD scale and reran the analysis. The prevalence ratio went down to 3.79, really the same level of risk. So in conclusion, injury is a common event in combat theater, whether it's associated with a benign activity like sports and training or something associated with a hostile act. Mild traumatic brain injury is highly associated with certain mechanisms, specifically those that are high energy injury mechanisms. PTSD is clearly associated with injury experience, with gender for females, and with specific conflict areas in this case, and also with mild traumatic brain injury reporting based on those immediate symptoms. So there's a very strong association between mild traumatic brain injury and PTSD. Is the PTSD solely due to combat exposure it's a question I can't answer with this data. Is there a relationship between the combat experience and repeated assaults and changes, neurological changes that may be linking those two? With regard to three or more current post-concussive symptoms, PTSD is the strongest association, even after removing the overlapping symptoms. Similarly, as is shown in the literature, for individuals with a more significant mild traumatic brain injury, there is an association with current post-concussive symptoms. So, long-term health ramifications. Since the time that this data was collected, both VA and DOD have instituted screening for routine screening for PTSD and mild traumatic brain injury and post-concussive symptoms. So at the VA, whenever veterans from these most recent conflicts come in, these questions are pretty much routine screening, leading to referrals, hopefully, and some remediation or some treatment. Clearly, there's a burden of injury that may impact individuals as they try to carry on with their life, with their family, or carry on with their work life if they're experiencing any of these post-concussive symptoms or persistent symptoms associated with PTSD. So getting people to treatment is really, really critical. And that's it. Thank you.